Hi, I'm Ian Barrett.
And I'm Erin Hayes.
And welcome to Business Beat. We've got a cool show today. Erin, can you talk a little bit about our guest?
We do. We have Adrian Finlay from Music Worcester with us. He's the executive director. And I have to say, I was shocked to find out how long Music Worcester has been a part of Worcester.
Don't keep the audience in suspense. How long have they been?
Well, they are celebrating their 160th year this year.
That is absolutely phenomenal in terms of longevity and success and running a business, especially a not-for-profit business. Can you imagine that when they founded this organization 160 years ago, that they thought it would reach into the 2020s?
No, I mean, maybe they did. Given how successful it is, perhaps they did have some big thinkers, but I'm just in awe. You don't meet many businesses that old or nonprofits.
Well, absolutely. That's a big part of it. Well, obviously, I'm excited to find out what this is all about and how they managed to stay around for such a long time. So without any further ado, let's check it out. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Business Beat. I'm Ian Barrett. This is Erin Hayes, and we're co-hosted with our lovely David Ginsberg from WICN. David, could you please introduce our guest?
Sure. Welcome to Studio 50. This is Adrian Finlay from Music Worcester.
Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. Wow.
Glad
Music
you're here.
Worcester. This is an odd thing to be happening in a radio station.
Right? Music Worcester is a cultural institution here. Tell the crowd a little bit, if they're not familiar with Music Worcester, what you do, who you bring to the table.
Well, it's one of those funny Worcester stories. We are 162 years young.
Wow.
We were formed in 1858, if you can believe it, to start presenting live music at the then just finished Mechanics Hall.
Wow. Okay.
Still a beautiful operating venue.
I don't think I've ever had a show start so strong.
Yeah.
Pre-Civil
War.
Yes. Yeah. So it's I'm standing on some shoulders here.
Yeah.
It can be a bit daunting at times.
Yeah. So you haven't been there from the beginning is what you're saying.
You look great.
No. Yeah. If my predecessor's listening though. No.
So you came to Music Worcester in 2012, right?
I did. I came from the symphony world. I was working at a regional symphony orchestra outside of D.C., and it was a pretty great fit. The institution was, I think, primed for a bit of change. There was a retirement of a long-standing executive director here. My predecessor served the organization for over 40 years.
Wow.
So
wow.
It was part of a whole strategic plan in line with her retirement, and it's been a pretty amazing ride. I have little to nothing to complain about. This community has been amazing to Music Worcester.
That's great. So talk about some of the artists that come to town.
So we bounce around the city. One of the benefits of being a presenter without our own venue, we use Mechanics Hall all the time. We're across the way here at Hanover Theater for some of our headliners each year. We're at Tuckerman Hall. We think each year about some of the college venues. And we open this season Mechanics Hall. Audra McDonald was fantastic opening night. A few years ago, we opened with Patti LuPone. We have Joshua Bell coming this fall to open our season. We were here at Hanover Theater this past November with Dance Theater of Harlem with an amazing, amazing program. And we had Jazz at Lincoln Center just last month, sold out. Worked with WICN strongly on that. Thank you.
We are a jazz station. It kind of made sense.
Nice tie-in.
Yeah, right?
And what else? We've signed on Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn to come in for next spring. Let's see, we have a tap dance company coming in November. And we revel in doing a bit of everything.
Well, it's for 150 years. That's phenomenal. That's absolutely incredible. Tell me about the founding of the organization, the foresight that people had or the interest that they had to have this be part of the community. And this is one of the things we can talk about, how Worcester is so foresightful. I'd love to know about it.
Yes, so our precursor organizations were smaller entities bringing live music around the city in the 1840s, 1850s, and then of course you had this amazing construction project which lasted a few years and was open to the public at the end of 1857, Mechanics Hall. And so we were formed to really present much of the live music, the cultural programming at that venue. And we were there and we started as a choral festival for our first few decades, but it was Our history is kind of amazingly awesome. In the 1880s, 1890s, even Dvorak came to Worcester a few times and was on stage at Mechanics Hall. Fast forward into the 1930s, we did a shift from Mechanics Hall to the Worcester Auditorium, which is a
crazy building. Now, what's the status of the Odd right now?
It's supposed to be
pending.
Yeah, pending. There's proposals to turn it into mixed use, commercial, residential. I think commercial and residential, right?
Right.
My high school graduation was there.
And they might be trying to get some of the universities involved, some of the higher
It's a wonderful building. It was all another amazing thing that was built back in the day, obviously. You know.
And we were there for decades. For much of our history in those years, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, we were a week-long festival in the fall, and we pretty much shut the city down. And then my predecessor brought it back to seasonal. Full season, we returned to Mechanics Hall. When it came back from its own kind of low point in 1978, and we've been happy to be there ever since.
Now, I think one of the things that's important to note for Music Worcester is that beyond the concerts that you present around the city is that you have a major education component. And for Worcester's youth, where schools aren't bringing music programs anymore, that it's essentially been outsourced, that's a critical component of what you deliver to the city.
So, we celebrated last season, while it was our 161st season,
right.
We were celebrating our 160th anniversary because we had the major flu pandemic in the teens, 1917, 1918. There was no festival that year. So, anyways, point is,
parallels to now. No.
We were celebrating, 100 years later. We were celebrating our 160th anniversary last year, and we celebrated in two major ways. We had a double day with Yo-Yo Ma at Mechanics Hall, which was amazing.
Yo and
absolutely
Yo.
Absolutely amazing.
Sorry.
The beard is full of them.
He's on fire. He's very happy to have you here.
Two sold-out performances and just absolutely amazing. But the real way we celebrated was for the first time ever, we had an artist in residence for a full season. And that is something that we are planning to do with some frequency. We're figuring it out, but every 2 to 3 years, depending on funding. And so this was a pianist. Simona Dinnerstein, she had a long relationship with us. She adopted 5 area schools. She was in town 4 times for major events as part of the season, and each time she spent a full week visiting grade 4 and 5 classrooms around the city.
So that's amazing.
It was fantastic.
It is fantastic. Now, going forward, Worcester is changing and very dynamic. And think about Worcester, at that time, it was the industrial belt. Things got made here, things got shipped from here. We talk about the hardiness of Worcester. In the Renaissance, which we're supposed to use, yet not use, we don't talk about the Renaissance because it's always been here, but in the Renaissance, what is the role of what you're doing?
Very fascinating to hear you ask that. So it will sound like a bit of a quick journey. We've had several names over our existence, as you might imagine. We're not obviously the entity we started with. The current Music Worcester is a product of a 3-part merger that happened in the mid-1990s. There were several entities at that time. The festival, which is where we really draw from, entity called International Artist Series, and then the former Mass Jazz Festival. Okay. And they were merged into one because none of those were doing all that well. Philanthropy was a bit stagnant. They weren't filling their houses. Not that anyone has sold out houses all the time. We all struggle with that. But they were really struggling. And so there was an effort here in town to force, in a sense, that merger. And out of that was born Music Worcester, even though we trace our roots through that festival back all the way back. So I say all that because we just have this really fascinating history, but also connection. Some of our current supporters, some of our current major donors come to us from that International Artist Series piece. Some of our supporters, have been attending for 70 or 80 years, believe it or not, and go back to the auditorium, our first years at the auditorium. It's kind of amazing. And so we have to be still a little bit of all things to all people.
Right.
There's that element, which is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How far can we stretch the budget? How much variety should we have in any season?
Right.
We, of course, have had our great successes and we've had our misses. Absolutely.
Right.
So there's always that piece. But to your question, we think all the time, and we are obsessed about this question, which exists for, I would say, all of the cultural organizations, the current demographics of Worcester. How can we connect around the city? Our education program is certainly one thing. How can we have that year-round?
Right.
Those households which maybe they have no way to get to downtown to attend Mechanics Hall,
right,
even if they have interest. Who's on stage? is a loaded question. Right. And type of group, where they're from, race, ethnicity, and we try to blend all that in some way.
This is great because I was actually going to ask about, I mean, for all businesses, what is your buyer persona?
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Especially in a city that's changing very quickly. There's a lot of new people moving to Worcester, a lot of younger people that are buying homes here because it's more affordable and they're commuting back and forth to Boston, but they're realizing there's a lot of culture right here, especially in the downtown area. How do you make inroads with that audience?
And one of, when I say blessing and a curse, one of our struggles, mighty struggles, is for the vast majority of what we do, it is one particular day for 2 hours. Right. Mm. And it is so different, and in some ways, I wouldn't say harder, but it is so difficult to market such a limited experience, as opposed to our friends in the visual arts world who can market an exhibition running for...
And spread it out over weeks or months.
Right. But that target, you are selling at sometimes a very high ticket price to make it work, an experience that is so limited. I don't have any answers, but it fascinates us.
We're going to take a little second out of this interview to talk about why local radio is so important and what makes a station like WICN so important to a place like Worcester. Radio is an oasis for a community. One of the oldest technologies that exists is actually radio, and it's something that your grandparents and great-grandparents listened to. It's what brought them together, and it's wonderful that in this day and age, this is still a tool that a community can use to stay connected. What's great about the programming here at this station is that they have the full gamut of music with the full gamut of topics with DJs from all over that bring real expertise to it, and they also reach out to the community and become part of the events that go on. In the case of Arts Worcester, they're directly involved with some of the events that are happening, and you'll see more involvement going forward. So you need to get involved with WICN, and you should tell WICN what you're interested in so they can promote you. That's what it's for. It's really rare to have a pulpit like this or a soapbox like this or a place to speak from, and that's what makes this station so wonderful. And it's something that, as we go forward, becomes more rare, and it needs to be treasured by this community. So the fact that we're here talking to business leaders about what they're doing and sharing this information with you, you can be doing this too. And now back to our interview.
So technology, how does that incorporate? We know that's the next level for you.
Well,
right?
To geek out for a second, I can finally say, as of a few weeks ago, we finally are fully equipped with all of our cross-domain tracking. So we have Google Analytics, talking to Salesforce, which is our database, talking to all of our Facebook pixels, and so we can track a sale in real time.
Okay, this is
so you can see where people are coming from, and that has got to be an incredible thing to see now, especially since being around since the 1800s.
Well, but that's your community. If you can't digitally track and you're not taking advantage of the databases you go to create, the well that you just went to is the well you should first go to. And what I see a lot now, and people maybe they took it for granted, maybe they didn't understand the social media changes that are going on. I've seen companies who, like for instance, people who run marathon races. If someone runs one race, they're likely to run the next race. But if you don't invest in getting them to come to the next race, you're losing all the investment you got trying to get in the first time, and then you have to spend all that money over with somebody else. Right. So taking care of your current audience is number one. That's why Delta paid $100,000 in bumped passenger fees to those ultra guys, the people on a flight from Hawaii. They paid $100,000 to keep these 10 guys, maybe some gals too, happy. So I'm sorry we bumped you out of first class. Here's your seat and coach. Here's 10 grand.
Because they understand, as I'm sure you do, what's the cost per acquisition for a customer? And once you have them, what's the cost to replace them if it came to that? It's much easier to maintain a customer than it is to generate a new one.
Absolutely. And so much of our email marketing is we never do a send all.
Right.
Everything is based on what they've bought previously.
I am so encouraged by what you're saying. This is phenomenal. You're doing more than a lot of companies. We talk to companies, we ask them, where are your customers? Where do you get this?
A lot of the time they don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, the next, I'm not ready for this next item, but we have to be prepared for, we know we have the systems in place to deal with it, but I have no idea of the expense. But the move from email to text and to market in that way, the day will come very soon if it's not already here. People don't want to get their day of emails, reminders where to park and everything. Right. They want it as a text message. Right. And sure, that technology is there, but we're not quite ready for that. That's coming at us very quickly, though.
It also allow you to compartmentalize and send things out on a higher frequency, lower frequency, and obviously directly. You could be texting all the people you know are coming to a show, to let them know if there's a parking change or traffic change or something like that.
Especially
that's
with construction that's happening in real time.
Kelly Square is awesome. Go down
there. It's awesome-er.
Hey, you know what? It's not any more challenging to get through with all the construction equipment than it was when there was no equipment.
True.
I think, in fact, it's a little bit safer because there's guys in vests with flags.
Well, we see it here on Main Street has been getting ripped up for the past year plus. New sidewalks going in. The sections of the street closed down. So if you have a show at Mechanics Hall and all of a sudden four blocks aren't accessible, you have to make sure your audience that's coming that night knows how to do it. And we've seen this where musicians have to load in and they can't get a truck to the back door to get to the loading dock because this main street is closed off.
And so who thought traffic patterns were going to be something that would affect your business? And it really absolutely does. And so you need that ability to communicate. Bringing up a parallel organization with the Lowell Folk Festival is something I've watched happen from a very tiny operation to what I think is a nationally recognized, at least, operation right now. And it did a lot to change people's opinion of what goes on in Lowell. That's what I think is so important about music. You know, this is something that people didn't have the money to invest in, and some entrepreneurs got on behind it and said, let's do this. Let's got to believe in this. What is your role, like I said, going now into this 2020 and beyond?
Yeah.
And what kind of support do you need?
Answering first as from Music Wister's perspective. So this dinosaur to some, this very exciting thing to others, and balancing all that. I do think one of the things we struggle with is selling ourselves versus selling who's on stage.
Yeah. Right.
And it's a very basic, rather complicated branding awareness conversation that we get into all the time. So if I was answering or knowing what our marketing committee focuses on and what some of our board members focus on, it would absolutely be a general awareness question and in some ways catching up, having this community at large recognize this longevity, but just because you've been doing something for that long doesn't mean it's good, but the quality piece there.
Sure.
And recognizing, I think, the fact that we, and in some ways Mechanics Hall too, I would put into this conversation, has been here all along. It's not the bright, shiny new thing, but we have been here year after year, driving traffic to downtown, and in many ways, I do think we're so easily forgotten.
True.
And that's not, I think, enough a part of the conversation in general.
So, within that, I'm curious, having been around as long as you have, is there a sort of a generational passing of the baton among audience members? You know, my dad used to bring me to classical music concerts as a kid, and I had no idea why I was there. I was bored to pieces. But then I get older and realize, you develop an appreciation for the music and realize just how complex it is. Do you see that, and how do you bring those kids along as they grow up and become parents themselves and become members of the local community that they become members?
Yes, well, we absolutely see that. I would actually say many of our longest tenure supporters, our subscribers, are often in that category, especially those who are multi-generational. They came as kids, they were brought as kids, now they do it themselves. Yeah. But how do we address that question? So a couple of ways. No, you know, hugely blazing eureka light bulbs going off on that, but we try many things, and we hope that put together where we're working in that way. We have an annual high school and middle school instrumental competition. So we're connecting with families who have already a very vested interest,
sure.
Many of whom are driving their kids into Boston to take lessons every week at New England Conservatory. So we have inroads into that community here in central Massachusetts.
Okay.
So that's a start for a certain part of that conversation. We have a free ticket program. Many of our corporate supporters like funding this program. We call it Tickets to Opportunity. And so we are able to go around to many, even this Friday, we have Chanticleer at Mechanics Hall. Burncoat High School, very well represented. South High, the entire choir program will be there. So we work in that way as well. And when possible, we like to encourage parents to attend with the kids so it's not just the teacher coming. So all put together, many things we're trying. No one thing suffices, absolutely not.
Yeah, multi-touch points.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So we're just going to take a moment to get into some of the detail about the studio that we're in, Studio 50 at WICN. Studio 50 is located at WICN Public Radio at 50 Portland Street in Worcester, in the heart of the artistically emerging Grid and Theater District, and is now open for business. Full digital recording studio with Avid C24 mixing board and Pro Tools, 24-hour access, acoustic grand piano, and state-of-the-art acoustically engineered live room that can be used for performance or recording. This exciting location resides inside WICN Public Radio, taking you from conception to broadcast possibilities. Producers, engineers, coaches are all on staff. Recording training is available. Take your next project to Studio 50 and be inspired. All right, well, now back to our interview.
I think it's critical to have, first of all, I like longevity. I love the history that you have. And I think that this is part of the soul of the community. And it would be a shame to see anything like this go away. But for so many more well-funded areas of the country, they have gone away already. How did you make it? How did you guys survive?
On the operational side, on the programmatic side, we do have one part of our operations, which I would say is in-house. We have the Worcester Chorus has been part of our organization since day one, way back in 1858. So about a quarter of our events, if you look at our schedule, reflect the activities of the Worcester Chorus. After that, everything is on the presenting side. So one of the benefits of being a presenter is we can be reactive. We carry very little in the way of overhead year to year. We can change, we can adjust. We might need a year to catch up, so there still might be heavy conversations, say if there were significant losses or if there's a huge market downturn that, you know, our endowment, we have a rolling 3-year average that we pull, so a really bad quarter stays with us to bring down the drawdowns that we can take for 3 years. And so all that put together, though, we still can be rather, we feel rather flexible. We don't feel like we're beholden to much. And so we feel rather nimble, remarkably. I don't think you necessarily might pick up on that if you look at us from, if you're looking at our website, if you look at what we do. But we can be reactive. If there's very negative circumstances in 1 year, we can adjust for a couple of years to come back. So we do, you know, we have seen deficits over the years, but, you know, knock on wood, we've 8 years running with operating small surpluses, so we count that as a major plus.
As someone who manages the nonprofit, how does that happen?
As someone who manages the nonprofit.
Hold on, David's got to get his notebook.
Yeah, that's insane. That's crazy.
It really is.
Especially in a world where all of our hero businesses are designed to drive 100% debt. I mean, these companies go in debt for 10 years straight, and that's the way we're supposed to take the investor money. It's amazing to know that you did this 8 years straight with any kind of profit.
I don't know if I have an answer to that. We're rather, even if I might have described us as nimble, we're rather slow to change, I would say, though. So there is that side to it, too. When we are thinking of new hires, staff expansion, budget expansion, we like to test things out first. So we take new initiatives with baby steps first, right. And then we'll make a decision. So I think that has absolutely helped. I also think, though, it's just this community is so supportive. We have seen our budget grow so much. And just, again, putting on my hat as a lead fundraiser for the organization, while there's always annual operating budgets to balance, a huge part of my job has been driving funds into the endowment.
So speaking of fundraising, can you talk to us about that? Tell us a little bit about your fundraising.
Sure, absolutely. There's definitely the corporate piece. Mm-hmm. There is a significant corporate community here in Central Mass. We're happy to have many supporters in that community. There's a huge foundation community, private philanthropic entities, some family-based, some corporate-related. Mm-hmm. We're so fortunate to have many of them attached, not annually necessarily, but over the years to have relationships with many. But philanthropy for us, what we work the hardest at is establishing connections and community with our donors. And that absolutely starts with our subscribers, the folks we see the most at concerts over and over again, and starting those relationships. And then thinking whatever metaphor you want to use, you know, the funnel, adding people into the pipeline, mm-hmm. and trying to, over the course of years, move them from single ticket buyer to subscriber donor, you know, leadership giving circle. Of course, there's great limits on what you can do and the number of households you can move along, but that is where we absolutely focus our efforts.
And we see it, because I think as a nonprofit for WICN, we go after a lot of the same donors and large grantors. And there is, what's one of the positives here is that there is this sort of vibrance, and there is a sense that as the city is growing and making this giant comeback, there's a pride of regional ownership, and whether it's supporting a nonprofit radio station, Music Worcester, the Worcester Art Museum, any of these other cultural organizations, the richness that we collectively provide to the quality of life in the city, people do recognize the value of that, I think, and that's where we see a lot. And obviously, relationship management is a huge part, but people recognize these are ours. We don't have to go to Boston. We don't have to go to New York. We have this here.
And I would also say there's something particularly Worcester in the following way. I think David and I have a whole host of colleagues, and there's a great cadre there of mutual support. So we will see our fellow directors at our events. We will be attending events at Hanover Theater, right. Mechanics Hall, the Worcester Art Museum, and it's very much reciprocal.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, it's important to have that community of support.
So how do we get the next generation involved?
When it comes to Music Worcester, I would say first and foremost, I think of who is on stage. I absolutely think of artistic product, who we are selling, what we are selling, where we are selling it. It could come to pass very soon that we determine that, you know, maybe we're no longer October through May. Maybe we need to dabble with outdoor venues. Maybe we need to dabble with outdoor cold weather. But it's paying attention to up-and-coming artists, certainly. It's paying attention, I would say, particularly to those artists who are increasingly in the category of what I call they can do it all. They might have, you know, gone to Oberlin for opera training, but they really have a career in jazz. And there's all kinds of iterations of that. And those artists operating kind of blurring lines between genres or even just being able to operate in so many spheres when we think of our traditional breakdown of genres, I'm fascinated by those artists, and I think we're only going to see more of that.
Oh, fantastic. I'm going to share a personal story, which is that we were in Luxembourg a year and a half ago, and at night there was a gazebo there, and it was packed with a mini orchestra. It wasn't a huge orchestra, but there was some decent sound. They had, you know, four good speakers that were pointing out from the center of the court. They have a really old building that was done, you know, it's like one of the city buildings is right there. And there's a nice stone courtyard, and then there's a gazebo at the end. And no announcement. There's just the band rolls in and just starts playing. And there's all these cafes and all these restaurants, and you can sit out there. And everybody moved out of the bars and sat down in the cafe, and they're just watching this band happen. And I felt like I was in some kind of movie because it was absolutely gorgeous. It was well lit. It sounded amazing. It's echoing off the stone in the middle of this really, really old courtyard. It just made so much sense. It's like, this is how you know that you live in a really beautiful community.
And that was in September, by the way. So
That's what I was thinking.
Yes. Okay. So cold weather was nearly upon us, but we were outside enjoying the orchestra.
Oh, fantastic.
How can we help? How can we join? How can we support you?
MusicWorcester.org. Everything you need is there. Upcoming events, hints about what's coming up next season, what we do, special programs we offer, packages with restaurants, all information about those that we work with and partner with. MusicWorcester.org. Upcoming events, I mentioned Chanticleer this Friday. We go through the end of April with our main series at Mechanics Hall. We end our main series on April 25th with a minority orchestra out of London, which is just absolutely fascinating. It was an orchestra, traditional orchestra, but started by minority players and welcoming minority players from across Europe's conservatories. Chinique is the name.
Wow. Cool.
The soloist will be the cellist who played the Royal Wedding in 2018,
oh,
Sheku Kana Mason.
Wow.
So that also, musicwister.org. I would say just, if you are listening and you didn't know at all who we were, if Worcester still might be something you're learning about, I would absolutely say just start coming.
Yes.
Try us out.
That's a great suggestion.
Try us out. If it's, you know, if it's not Music Worcester, there's so much else downtown.
Oh, that's gonna be the new slogan for marketing Worcester overall. Just try it out.
Just come on.
Buy a couple of cups. Dude, we got donks.
Don't be a jerk. Come on. Well, I think they should have a fall festival now, clearly.
Yes.
Outside.
Yes.
And
we'll co-brand
thank
it.
You. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, WICN, for hosting Business Beat. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This is a really wonderful community, and it's a really great opportunity to catch up with all the dynamic that's going on. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you guys again next time.
Well, I learned a lot.
I did too. I mean, they are an enormous part of Worcester's history.
It also tells you about the power of music in general.
I loved hearing where they started. What was it? Mechanics Hall? Was that where they
first started? Mechanics Hall, but they've been at the Odds. And as Worcester grows, there'll be more venues, hopefully, for them to share their program.
Oh, for sure.
Well, thanks for listening to Business Beat. I hope you learned something. If you'd like to be a guest or if you enjoyed the show, please let us know. Thank you to WICN, and thank you to you.
Talk to you next time.